For hand-picked, carefully curated music, exploring all sorts of new sounds from the independent music scene and classic underground trailblazers, join me, John Mosier, for Modern Music. It's every Saturday afternoon from 4 until 6, right here on 101.9 WDET.
This is Mishmash, a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under-the-radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth. The 2024 election has honestly been underway since 2020, but this week, President Joe Biden officially announced his candidacy for re-election. Here with me to talk about his newest column for the Detroit News, quote, 2024 may feel like Trump-Biden sequel, but wild cards remain, is Chad Livengood. Chad, welcome to Mishmash.
Shayna, how are you?
I'm good. So let's dig right into this. Biden has announced Trump is the presumed Republican nominee at this point. So what are the wild cards that you're talking about?
Yeah, the wild cards are that the dynamics of this election are not going to be the same. In 2020, COVID and the pandemic in general dominated our lives and all of the debate and conversations about masking and restrictions and the public health emergency, and some people were taking it seriously, some people were taking it gravely seriously, and some people were taking it not seriously at all. And now the pandemic is largely in the rearview mirror, and we've got two big issues that are, I think, are wild cards here. And one is abortion. Abortion rights were fully intact in 2020. And then the Supreme Court last year threw out a half century of abortion rights under Roe v. Wade. And we saw the results in the midterm elections, particularly here in Michigan. We saw how this galvanized female voters and even male voters in the moderate middle to turn out and help Democrats win statewide elections, win the legislature, win the majority of congressional seats, change the Constitution. And so this is going to be now put abortion on the ballot in all 50 states. And it'll put abortion on the ballot in some other states that will be pretty key pivotal swing states that always decide the presidency, Ohio and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, now Arizona. And then we have guns and gun control in America. That conversation was non-existent in 2020. And I think you will see that this will become a different factor, regardless of whether Joe Biden and Donald Trump are the nominees, which right now, barring some unforeseen event, it seems pretty likely that they're the odds-on favorites to have a rematch.
How important is Michigan going to be in the 2024 presidential election?
I think like the last couple of cycles, it will be important, and it will be a state that helps decide who is in the White House in 2025, even though we should know we have one fewer electoral vote now we lost a congressional seat, or we're down to 15 now, so it's a little diminished, but Michigan remains the ninth largest, most populous state in the country, and it has a pretty diverse electorate that politicians come in and want to be in front of. And we've seen that pretty intensely in the last two cycles, more so than we had seen in many years. And yeah, kind of somewhat credit Donald Trump for that, actually. He broke the cycle of Republican losses, and he also forced Hillary Clinton in 2016 to actually try to compete here, particularly in the last week. And that's why it came down to a less than 11,000 vote outcome.
Given what happened in Michigan in the most recent election, what is going on with the Republican Party, and what are you seeing as far as how they are preparing for this 2024 election?
The Michigan Republican Party, as we kind of have known it for years, generations, is essentially dead. It is not operating as a normal political party. With the takeover by Christina Caramo, the conservative activist who unsuccessfully ran for Secretary of State, and still, if I'm sure here on the 26th of April, still hasn't conceded the election from last fall. But she's in charge, and she's not running a normal Republican Party. She doesn't have office space. She doesn't have money. And the donor class is essentially sitting out, operating the Republican Party. So the normal machinery of the Republican Party is kind of non-existent. And so what are they doing to get ready? I mean, they haven't even actually committed to having a primary next year. She's still talking about maybe having a closed convention caucus of some sort, that you would just, it would be closed to precinct delegates, and it would, you know, be just a couple thousand Republicans would have to, would get to decide who the nomination goes to in the primary season for the Republican Party next year. So it is disarray. There's no other way to put it. And so they're not, but on the other side, the Democrats, I mean, they are all now locking in, marching in lockstep with President Biden to give him another term.
Obviously, we're all still kind of reeling from the 2020 election fiasco, which had a lot of very false accusations of rampant voter fraud. In the years since, we've seen some turnover at clerk's offices throughout Michigan. We've obviously had another election since then. How do you see 2024 playing out when it comes to this idea, this false idea that there's rampant voter fraud?
I think it's going to depend on whether Donald Trump, if he is indeed the Republican nominee, wants to keep litigating 2020 when there have been dozens of audits and a Republican-controlled state Senate committee that concluded there was no rampant voter fraud that it could have possibly affected the outcome of an election that Joe Biden won by 154,000 votes. Now, at the local level, we have seen the rise of Republicans and Trump activists trying to get onto local election boards. And they made a lot of noise that they were going to gum up the election last fall. It didn't happen. The election machinery of the state operated rather smoothly, and it was even a rather early night in Michigan, even though we thought that things were could potentially be chaos. But so in general, I don't see it really being as huge of an issue unless the former president wants to make that his campaign. And then there's a question of the strategy: is does he want to be forward looking? Does he want to have offer some kind of new vision, or does he want to continue to litigate the grievances of the past?
How much of a toss up is Michigan so far?
I think it's kind of hard to say at this point. Think it leans Democrat, in particular, just because of the Democrats have taken control of state government, and they have a majority of the congressional seats. That's in most part a result of the redistricting process, and to some extent also a result of Donald Trump and the sort of backlash that they faced, the Republicans faced in the polls last year because of Trump policies, and namely the Supreme Court ruling throwing out Roe v. Wade and abortion rights. So I think those two issues, abortion rights and guns, they will resonate here, particularly in suburban Detroit and suburban Grand Rapids, and that could be a major factor in helping Democrats win the state and keep Joe Biden in the presidency.
You recently had a column on dark money, the backdoor way that sometimes donors use to remain anonymous when they give money to a political candidate or campaign. There are legal ways to do this, and that's in large part because of the work of Richard McClellan, a retired Republican attorney, lobbyist, and advisor of former Governor John Engler. Now, McClellan says the practice has gone too far and we need to change our campaign finance laws. What prompted his change of heart?
Yeah, McClellan is now in his 80s, and he's having confessions of a political bagman moment here right now in his life, where he realizes, we did kind of go a little far. Basically, to back up a little bit, Michigan politicians have been setting up what are known as 501c4 nonprofit social welfare organizations, and they're they're the same thing as like if the Sierra Club operates as a 501c4, but they get to do it as like politician A and politician B, and we've seen this, and some might recall the Nerd Fund. That was a C4 that former Governor Rick Snyder set up, and he set up to pay for expenses that he didn't want to put on the taxpayers. Some things that you and I probably would be like, okay, that's not bad. If you need to go travel for something that's kind of work related, we don't really want to pay for that trip, but you can pay for it out of your fund. But what he did was he actually started paying one of his employees out of the fund. And we had some recent reporting, former Senate Majority Leader Arlen Meekhoff, in his last year in office, his political consultant transferred $500,000 into his organization. It was called the West Michigan Community Preservation Fund. And he has since, he's not spending the money down that fast. He's been out of office now since the end of 2018. And with the tax records that my colleague Craig Wagner obtained show that he's been spending less money per year than he actually spends in consultants, and they're unnamed or professional fees. But he's also gaining interest in it. And we ran the math based on the tax returns. And in 2021, this fund gained 12.6% if he had the whole thing invested in something. And then that just kind of raises some questions of, well, what's going on here? And why are you investing this money? And it has the look of that politicians have turned these things into like an annuity or their own little private foundation paid for by someone else's money. This is not Arlen Meekhoff's money. Someone gave money to another 501c4, and then that 501c4 concealed its donors and gave this money to Arlen Meekhoff's 501c4. And it is literally legal money laundering. And it goes on in Michigan politics every day. And Richard McClellan is one of the attorneys in Lansing, or barrister, as we sometimes call him. And he's one of the guys that came up with this idea in the first place. And now he's like, yeah, it's gone a little far. He was reacting actually to our reporting on Arlen Meekhoff and was kind of shocked by it, that the fund was gaining money and it could be invested in a stock market. It also could be invested in something else we don't know about, which when I confronted Meekhoff about it and asked him about it, he repeatedly said, everything you need to know is contained in the 990 form. Well, that's just not true. There's no detail of who the professional fees go to. Unlike campaign finance, where if you have a campaign committee, you have to report, I paid $10,000 to consultant A and $20,000 to the TV station or WXYZ or whatever it is. And you have to list those and itemize those expenses. In the backdoor system here with the 501c4s, the social welfare groups, they don't have to. They have very vague line items. So Arlen Meekhoff says, I had $48,000 professional fees and other payments to independent contractors, that end quote. And that's that there's no, there's we for all we know, he's paying himself or his family. But we don't know because there's nothing in it. So my point in my column was everything you need to know is not contained in the 990. And that is why we have this sort of two systems of campaign finance in Michigan. The front door that is pretty well fully disclosed, and the back door, which is completely airtight and hard to penetrate. He says we ought to, at the very least, require that these two different systems on the same parallel, make them subject to disclosure. The other thing that him and Bob LeBrant, who was another one of these Republican attorneys in Lansing, who also were one of the architects of dark money, they think we need to go back to a system we had in the mid 90s, where lawmakers had office holder expense accounts that DTE Energy or Consumers Energy or Blue Cross Blue Shield or AT&T, all the big boys in town, they could donate $1,000 to every state rep's office holder expense account, but then that money would get disclosed, just like if they donate $1,000 to their campaign finance account, and then the office holder would have to disclose, I spent $100 going to the NAACP dinner in Detroit. I gave 10,000. I gave 10 bucks to the Boy Scouts. You know, I spent this much money on travel and gas back going back and forth to my district. Things that again, in the campaign finance system, you have to disclose. And we had this system up until the mid 90s. It got abolished. And in McClellan's words, he said, the do-gooders, you know, newspaper guys like you, got the law changed and they abolished office holder expense funds. Well, he's talking about the House Fiscal Agency scandal of 1993-94 that sent several people to prison, broke by the Detroit News, by the way, that won the Pulitzer Prize for it. And that scandal exposed how House Fiscal Agency employees were using these funds personal piggy banks. And then brought a lot more scrutiny on all kinds of other practices, including the office holder expense funds. And some politicians at the time didn't like that occasionally the do-gooders, the newspaper guys and gals, would write stories about how they were spending money buying season tickets to Spartan Stadium and suites at Michigan Stadium as well. And so they just did away with it, and they went to the dark side, essentially, for lack of better words, and started using this code in the IRS code that allows, you know, them to just offload these expenses. And the best part is they don't have to tell the public who gave them the money and or how they really actually spent it. And so McClellan just thinks we just need to go back to the future and go back to where we were 30 years ago.
So let's talk roads before we head out here.
Oh, we can't go without that. Yeah.
Macomb County is having trouble getting what it feels is its fair share of road money. Break that down for us.
Yeah. So this goes back to Act 51 of 1951, which is the original funding formula for how we funded roads in Michigan. But also in context, this is pre-interstate system. And so we had our big corridors like Michigan and Gratiot and Woodward and Grand River. And so we created a system where we were funding these corridors run by the state transportation department. And then these arterial roads that feed into the big corridors that were run by the counties or cities or villages. And what Macomb County has complained about for years is that the fund, the formula gives the same amount of money to a two-lane road as a six-lane road. And in my recent column in the Detroit News, I used the example of Mound Road at 14 Mile and Warren along the Sterling Heights border. It is six lanes and it's a busy road there. And then if you go just about 9 miles north, up to 23 Mile Road, it gets down to two lanes. And Macomb County gets the same amount of money for the six-lane version of Mound Road as the two-lane version. And they have complained about this ad nauseum in the legislature, Macomb, Oakland, and Wayne, and other urban, suburban counties, that this road funding formula benefits local rural areas of the state more. And it does on a per capita basis. It's hundreds of dollars more per car or driver up in like places, far-flung corners of the state like Keweenaw County or Alger County, or even in the Thumb and just a few, dozen miles away from Metro Detroit. North, you can find that counties get hundreds of dollars more per driver than Macomb and Oakland County do. And so they would like to have this changed so that the formula is more about the number of lane miles you have. If you have six lane miles, it costs a lot more to rebuild, obviously, than if you had two lane miles. They also would like to, there's bipartisan agreement about this in Macomb County. They'd also like to change the funding formula to take the vehicle registration fees, the so-called birthday tax, take it off the top, and distribute that money based on where it came from. And because they've complained for a long time that Macomb County is a donor county. And so I ran the numbers here Macomb County received about $89 for every vehicle from the registration fee tax, while their drivers paid $142 per driver. So there's a pretty big disparity there. Whereas if you go up to Keweenaw County, they received $918 per registered vehicle and they paid about $124 in tax. So they paid less tax in Macomb County and they got seven times as much money basically as they paid in. And this has just been a long complaint. And so what the Macomb County politicians are proposing is let's just take this money off the top and distribute it to where it came from. And then what happens if you do that, you deplete the fund, first of all, and you have less money to go around for all roads. And so there's a possibility that if Macomb County did this, they might get more money for the county roads, but they also might get less money going to MDOT to maintain the highways, 696, I-94, Hall Road, in their county. And so there's a little catch 22 when you start tinkering with the Act 51 formula, which they're not alone. I mean, every politician from Metro Detroit has been talking about doing this for basically since Ronald Reagan was president.
Yeah. So, I mean, as you mentioned, this was created in 1951. There have been efforts to change this before. I mean, are we looking to be any closer or are we going to be back here again, you know, 50 years from now saying, hey, that 1951 law is super old?
Well, I don't think we got 50 years to last here. And here's why, because the gas tax in Michigan is a dying tax. Vehicles over time have gotten much more fuel efficient, but we're just going to be using less fuel as we transition to electric vehicles. EVs are somewhere around 7% of the fleet of all vehicles on the road right now. They're projected to be 10% by 2025. And some automakers have goals, and the federal government, the Biden administration, have goals of 50% of vehicles being EVs by 2040. So it's not that far away where we're going to start losing, we're going to have less and less gas tax. And now EVs do pay a little higher premium for their vehicle registration fee, but does it make up for how much gas they would have consumed? And the best example of that right now on the road is the F-150 Lightning compared to its cousin, the F-150 gas V8 engine that gets about 18 miles to the gallon, like the one that my fiance drives. And so the Lightning is consuming obviously no gas. And oh, by the way, the Lightning is 33% heavier than its gas cousin because of that battery is so heavy. So you have a heavier vehicle doing more damage to the roads than its other vehicle, the same exact vehicle, but it has a gas engine and the gas engine one is carrying the load as far as the cost of paying for it. So this has introduced a lot of talk in Lansing right now about at least exploring or testing a vehicle miles tax known as a VMT. Oregon and some Western states are already starting to experiment with as an alternative to paying gas taxes. You tax people truly on their mileage use. And this might be a way to actually implement tolling without having toll booth infrastructure and all that. You just have to agree to let put a transmitter in your car that would track your miles. And so I live in Howell and I drive up and down 94, 96 all the time. And I'm a pretty heavy user. I would pay a lot more than someone who lives in Ferndale and just works from home and doesn't really traverse very much. And so that's one idea that's been floated around in Lansing as a way to counter the loss of gas tax over time, diversify our revenue sources, and maybe even actually increase our revenue sources. Because again, we've had studies just as recently as a month or two ago that we're underfunding roads between $2.5 to $3 billion per year. And we know also from the projections is once I call it the governor's road plan, the get out the damn credit card plan, which is where she went and borrowed $3.5 billion. And by the way, we're going to spend $6 billion repaying the bonds over 30 years. But once that money is all spent by 2025, the projections literally in 2026 right now show pavement conditions going back downhill. So yeah, you're going to be going through a lot of barrels this summer and next summer, but enjoy it because this is probably as good as the roads are going to get for a while in Michigan unless we change this long-term funding problem.
Chad Livengood is the politics editor and columnist for the Detroit News. Chad, it is always so great to have your expertise and wisdom here with us on Mishmash.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station. This episode was produced by myself, Shayna Roth, and Hearns Laguerre Jr. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. Our digital team is Dave Kim and Sophia Joswiak, with additional production support from Jack Philbrandt. As always, if you listen to this show and you want to support it, you can do so by leaving us a review, or if you really, really like the podcast, and we really, really, really hope you do, you can support WDET. Just go to WDET.org/give. Without your support, none of this would be possible. Talk to you next week.